The other night, Tracy and Isaiah and I went out to eat at a sort of a local place. And I wasn't feeling really good. I was wanting to go out and get something to eat, go back home, get on the couch. And Tracy hadn't eaten for a good while. She was hungry and ready to eat. And Isaiah was just parched. He was just so thirsty. And so we got over there and asked somebody about how long it would be, and it said about 45 minutes. I mean, this place was packed, much more than they were expecting, loaded. So it'd be about 45 minutes, and so I didn't feel good, and Tracy was hungry, and Isaiah was thirsty. You know how that is. If you go somewhere else, it's just going to be 45 minutes there. So we said, okay, whatever. So we put our name in. Well, we got in about 40 minutes later and sat down and waited. And they didn't even act like they knew we were there. I mean, it was the weirdest thing. When the wait staff would walk by our table, it's not like they didn't notice us. It was like they were looking away from us. It was the weirdest thing. It was like we couldn't get anybody's attention. And we waited and waited, and I felt worse, and Tracy got hungrier, and Isaiah got thirstier, and it was just a very frustrating situation. Well, finally, I got the attention of somebody I knew that worked there, and they got somebody to come over, and come to find out that I had gotten somebody, or they had decided to, somebody that I knew that worked there, had decided to put in a good word for us and try to get us in quicker. Well, having done that, it sort of bypassed the system, so they didn't know we were there, even though we were seated. And so we finally, you know, got things going and finally got our food and all that. Or, if we hadn't done something, we'd still be sitting there and you'd be wondering how come Dave's not here to preach. We'd still be at the table and starving to death and all that other stuff. But I wonder if that sort of feeling that you've all had, we've all had that feeling of sitting in a restaurant and waiting and ready to eat, ready to get something to drink, ready just to move on with the night, and it's like they don't even know that you're there. And you're just waiting, and you're hungrier, and you're thirstier, and maybe even like with my situation, someone had done something good for us to try to move the process along that actually made things worse. If he'd have stayed out of it, we'd have gotten waited on sooner. You ever feel like that in life? Do you ever feel like in life that you're sitting around waiting and you've done what you were supposed to do and nothing is moving forward. Nothing is going the way that it's supposed to. And you're feeling worse. You're feeling worse about things. You're suffering. Maybe you're hurting. Maybe you're confused. And you sit there and wait and wait. And everybody else is getting their food. Everybody else is getting what's coming to them. Things are going well for everybody else. And there you sit and wait for things to get better. And you just feel like that somebody lost your name and they don't even know that you're there. You know, that never happens for the people of God. That never happens with God's people. It never happens with God's people that you just get lost in the shuffle. It just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen that God just forgets that you're there. Now, sometimes it can seem that way, you know, that sickness not curing itself, that disease is getting worse. Those money problems, they're not fixing themselves. And that child of mine that's going away from the Lord, he doesn't seem to be coming back anytime soon. And you just feel like that everything's passing you by. Nothing is going your way and nothing is being done. God doesn't lose you. God is always firmly in control. God is always in control of everything. He knows exactly where you are. He knows exactly what's going on, and He knows exactly what you need. And believe it or not, this is hard to imagine sometimes, but no matter what's happening with you right now, everything in your life is moving in the right direction for you. Sometimes that's hard to believe. Now, so for some of us here today, it's even harder to believe than usual because we got some real stuff going on. But everything in your life is moving in a direction that is to your benefit. And we're really going to drill down on that. We're sort of taking a journey over the next month, and we're going to look at the big picture. We're going to see how that even though God is invisible, He is still in control. It'd be nice if He was visible and in control. It'd be great if you could go somewhere and see Him in the control room in there. Oh, there He is. He's working the dials and everything. You'd be great. But He's invisible, but He's still in control. And then we're going to talk about God's timing. You know, sometimes you feel like that you're praying, you're working, you're doing, you're asking, and it's just not working out. But we'll see that the timing of God is always perfect. But boy, things are bad, aren't they? Aren't things rough in our culture? Aren't things going the wrong direction? Isn't the world trending in the wrong direction? But did you know that evil has an expiration date? There's always an end to bad things, and that's coming. And even though waiting is difficult, it's possible to wait without withering. That's possible. And we're going to talk about how to do that, Lord willing, as we go along. So we're going to start this morning with the big picture. God is invisible, but He is very much in control. Acts 17 is our text. I don't think you'll turn over there to Acts 17 because we're going to read part of it. We're going to start in verse 24. You'll recall that Paul is on a missionary journey. He's preaching throughout the Mediterranean world, and he's gotten to Athens. And while he's in Athens, he's walking around the city and internally experiencing what happens every time I walk around a big city. Every time I walk around a big city, what happened to him happens to me. I feel my spirit provoked within me. There's just so much that's wrong. There's just so many bad things that are going on. And Paul is walking around Athens and he sees these idols. Idols to sex and to war and to money and to commerce and to the sun and all of these idols. And he's so bothered because he knows that it's so wrong. And so he starts preaching and they're like, oh, we'd like to hear more about that. Not really because they were all that interested, but just because they were just sort of that way. And so he says, I'll preach to you. I'll tell you what I'm doing. And he begins to do that. In verse 23, or verse 22 really, we're going to start in verse 24. Now I want you to remember that this, probably more than all of the sermons that are in Acts, this is really easy to sort of get lost in the weeds. But I want you to remember something, that Paul in this sermon is not some egghead in a seminary delivering a lecture to a bunch of philosophical theologians. You know, a bunch of brainiacs. This isn't that. It can be hard to keep that in mind because this sermon is pretty high level. What I want you to remember is that Paul is preaching this sermon to people like you. To people who had jobs and families and sicknesses, and money concerns, and problems. They got colds, and they stubbed their toes, and they lost that other sock, just like you do. Where does that other sock go by? Does anybody know? Okay. The dryer eats it. Raise that to you. But I want you to remember that what Paul is doing is telling people just like you, here's what you need to do to get saved and stay saved. Now, the biggest thing that's going to happen to you and to me that's going to threaten our salvation is daily life. The biggest thing that's going to happen to you and to me to threaten our salvation is daily life. This sermon is going to sound about as far from that as it can, but I want to tell you it's about daily life. What Paul is going to tell you in that sermon is going to get you saved if you aren't, and it's going to keep you saved if you are. As we read it, I would love for you to watch for four things. As we read it, I would love for you to watch for four things. Number one, would love for you to watch for what God did. He's going to say some things past tense, what God did. Then I want you to look for what God is doing. He's going to talk present tense. Here's what He's doing now. Then I want you to look for the answer to why He's doing it. Why is God doing what He does? And then I want you to look for how it all ends. It's going to get all wrapped up in a bow one day. How is that? So, what did God do? What is He doing? Why is He doing it? And how does it end? Acts chapter 17 and verse 24. The God who made the world and all things in it, since He is Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands, nor is He served by human hands, as though He needed anything, since He Himself gives to all people life and breath and all things. And He made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined their appointed times and the boundaries of their habitation, that they would seek God, if perhaps they might grope for Him and find Him, though He is not far from each one of us. For in Him we live and move and exist, I was in the old King James there, as even some of your own poets have said, for we also are His children. Being then the children of God, we ought not to think that the divine nature is like gold or silver or stone, an image formed by the art and thought of man. Therefore, having overlooked the times of ignorance, God is now declaring to all men everywhere that people should repent, because He has fixed a day in which He will judge the world in righteousness through a man whom He has appointed, having furnished proof to all men by raising Him from the dead. What did God do? What did God do? What does Paul speak of God doing in the past tense? Notice verse 24. What he says is that God made the world and all things in it. God made everything in the beginning. That includes stars that number, I think the term is septillion. There are one septillion stars in the universe. I think that's right. What it means is a one followed by 24 zeros. And the Bible says that God knows the names of each and every one. Now, that may not sound like a big deal to you, but if you have more than one child, so my mother never had this problem because there's only one of me. And there was never a question who was in trouble. David Glenn? Every time. But if you have more than one child, you know that parents often do that thing where somebody said that calling the roll. You know what I'm talking about if you got more than one child? A child's doing something and you're so flustered you can't come up with the right name. Jack, Rhiannon, Isaiah! Calling the roll. Sometimes I can't get the names of my own kids right. I can never get their ages right. And I always have to stop it. How are you again? But God made about, give or take, stars, one followed by 24 zeros. And He knows every single one. He made the earth. You know how many different living species are on the earth? Do you know? We know of, on the earth, 8.7 million different species. I say we know because you know what scientists think? We haven't found them all yet. That there are actually millions more that we've never seen. And God made all of that. And he made all of that from what? What did he make all of it from? Where did he get his supplies? Lowe's? Home improvement? Does God have an account at home at Home Depot? What did he make it out of? You know, when somebody makes something, you know, we got a lot of men who are very talented in making things out of wood, and they'll make something. This pulpit, Neil made the pulpit that we use in class. If you've ever looked at it, unfortunately, I'm the only one who ever gets to see it. You should have put like that design on the front, because I'm the only one who ever gets to enjoy it. But look at it if you've never have. It's beautiful. And somebody makes something out of wood, and they say, hey, look what I made. What do you always ask them? There's always a question you ask. What, when they make something out of wood, what do you always ask them? Oh, what did you make that out of? If they're a smart aleck, they go, wood, duh, right, I got that. But what I'm asking is, what sort of wood? What did you make that out of? Have you ever had someone say to you, nothing? Look at that beautiful table. What'd you make that table out of? Nothing. Nothing. Just decided I want a table, and one day I just took a big bunch of nothing, and I started moving my hands, and man, all of a sudden there was this beautiful table. Never happened. Because we can't make anything out of nothing. We can't do that. And we can make a lot of nothing out of something. Just listen to one of my sermons one day. Right? You can make a lot of nothing, but you can't make something out of nothing. And yet that's what God did. He made everything. And I want you to notice what else He did. Look at verse 26. God already, look at verse 26, what has God already done? What does God already know? Because He's the one in control of it. Not only did God make everything, He preordained a lot of other things. This says that He predetermined the appointed times and boundaries of the habitation of all the nations. So from the very beginning, God knew the boundaries that America would occupy and Brazil would occupy and China. Did you know that in the history of humanity, there have been about 150,000 separate people groups? 150,000 separate people groups. From the very beginning, God knew exactly where all of them would come from, where they would live, what they would do, how long they would last, and how they would end. 150,000. He had to know everything about their government. He had to know everything about the land that they would live on, the military they would have, the economy they would have, the population. And then God had to know how all of those nations would interact together to result in how long each of them lasted. You know, I can't even do a good job with the Cracker Barrel peg game. You know what I'm talking about? The Cracker Barrel peg game. I just can't do any better than egg noremus. That's as good as I get. Now, unfortunately, and you may know this already, this is sad. You know the big kerfuffle about the Cracker Barrel logo and all that stuff. You know about all that stuff. But did you know that even though they decided not to change the logo, they decided to change the peg game? Did you know this? They changed the writing on the peg game. So what it used to say was, if you got one peg left, you're a genius. If two, you're pretty smart. If you left three, just plain dumb. And if you left four, you're an ignoramus, which is what I always was. Well, apparently somebody got offended by that, as they do in our culture. Bunch of soap bubbles floating around, popping at every little thing that happens. And so now it says, or it's going to say, if you leave one, you're still a genius. That's good. If you leave two, you're rocking the chair, but not the game. And if you leave three or more, no need to be embarrassed. Try again. What a goofy world we live in. But I was always the ignoramus, because I can't ever figure out how to get less than four or five of them things on there. And how to figure out all of those things moving and jumping and interacting with each other. And I never could figure that out. But here's God, over thousands of years of human history with 150,000 people groups, knowing exactly where they'll live and how long they'll be there. That's what God does. And so what we understand is that, with my lens, if God can do all of that, do you think that God can figure out, okay, here's David's money, here's David's bills, I bet I can figure out how to make that work. I bet I can figure that out. Or God, you know, God says, well, there's David's illness, and there's David's medication, and there's David's doctors, and I bet I've got the sense, God says, to figure out how I can make all that work. Or God looks at our family, and He says, you know, I see a lot of dysfunction there, man. There's a lot of people knocking heads and can't get along. I bet I can figure something out there. Because that's what He does. So this is what God did, according to Paul. Now, what did you notice as we read the passage? What did you notice that God is doing? What did you notice that God is doing? Well, Paul tells us in this passage that He is Lord of heaven and earth. But even though He is Lord of heaven and earth, He is not far from each one of us, which is a good thing, because what does He give us? Did you notice what He gives us? Did you notice in verse 25 what He gives us? It's a good thing He's close, because what does verse 25 say? Verse 25 says He gives to all people. Is that you? Does that include you? Is that Brandy? Is that Carol? Is that Jim? He gives to all people life and breath and all things. He's never far from you. He's always near you. Even though He's the Lord of heaven and earth, He's always near you, which is a good thing. Because He's always giving you life and breath and everything that you have. You know, we talk like that it's only the very, very ill that are on life support. You know, we say things like, well, you know, he's on that machine, he can't breathe on his own. Or, well, you know, that's the machine is keeping her alive. Like they're the only ones in that condition. We're all on life support. We're all on life support. And if God chose to pull the plug, we would all cease to exist. The life support is God. We're all on life support. Because God is constantly with us, giving us all the things that we need. And isn't it sort of an insult to God to say, well, God's keeping me alive, but the only reason He's doing it is to ignore me. Isn't that sort of an insult? Or God's keeping me alive, but the only reason He's doing it is because He wants to hurt me. That would just be cruel. That wouldn't be good. But we do that all the time. God's giving me breath, and He's giving me food, and He's giving me life. He's just ignoring me. Well, that would be horrible. But God is always near us to give us the things that we need. What did you notice before we begin to wrap up? What did you notice that it says is the purpose of everything? Did you notice that? That God, don't miss this. In verse 26, God has been in control of human history since day one. Really, since before day one. But He's been in control of the whole thing. Why did God do, why has He done everything that He did? He has an ultimate purpose for everything that He does. What is it? In verse 27. The ultimate purpose is that we would seek Him and maybe find Him. Now, the maybe there is our fault, not his fault. Because remember, where is he? He's right next to us. He says that we, that should say, shouldn't say group there, it should say might grope for him and find him. Anyway, but that's because we have a problem. We're blind. We don't always want God. But he's right there with us, and he is findable by us. God wants you to find him. I have a compulsive fear of bothering people. You may share this. Not everybody does, but I've talked to other people who are the same way. I have a compulsive fear of bothering people. I always think that if I reach out and make contact with somebody, I'm bugging them and bothering and keeping them from something they'd rather be doing, which is like watching grass grow or something, rather than talk to me. You can rest assured, if I end up making a phone call or sending a text or an email to you, I overcame a whole lot of anxiety just to get that done. You can rest assured, because I am convinced you don't want me to call you. And by the look on many of your faces, I'm probably right about it. A lot of you are like, yeah, well, that's pretty much right. But I have this compulsive fear of that, and that carries over into my relationship with God, because I'm not sure he wants to hear from me either. I'm not real sure that he wants to fool with me either. And I think a lot of people are like that, even Christians. Kind of hard to keep believing that when, if you really, really, really believe what the Hebrew writer said, that we need to come boldly to the throne of grace. We need to come with confidence to the throne of grace. But make no mistake, God wants you to find him. He wants you to reach out. Isaiah, for those of you who don't know, Isaiah drives a truck. He delivers building materials. And he was talking to a customer the other day, an older guy. And the older gentleman said, I've got three kids. And he said, once about every 3 or 4 months, one of my kids will call. He said, they live away from here. And he said, they call me about every 3 or 4 months. He said, I hear from my children about once every 3 or 4 months. Can you imagine what that does to a father? To only hear from his children 2 or 3 or 4 times a year? A father, a mother, wants their children to reach out. And so does God. He wants us to find him. Next week, Lord willing, we're going to be talking about God's perfect timing. It may seem like that he's not there for you, and he's not coming around for you. But we're going to see next week that God's timing is perfect. Tonight, Lord willing, we're going to be looking at Mark chapter 2, the account of the paralyzed man and his friends who broke through the roof. We'll be talking about breakthrough faith. And we'll be talking about different kinds of faith and the strength of our faith and sort of figuring out what sort of faith do you have and what does that mean for your relationship with God. So we'll talk about that tonight. That'll be 6 p.m. here at the church building. As we wrap up, though, I want to finish with this. Did you notice in the passage toward the end of the sermon, did you notice that Paul says that God has a perfect ending in mind? God is going to bring everything to a perfect end. He said that God has fixed a day in which he will judge the world, how? In righteousness. Every evil is going to be held accountable. Every difficult situation is going to be rectified. Every righteous person is going to be rewarded when God judges the world. Now, I want you to notice that he's going to judge the world through Jesus. He's going to judge the world through Jesus. So let me ask you a question. If God is going to judge the world through Jesus later, what should you do now? if God is going to judge the world through Jesus later, who should you get on the right side of now? I have a friend who's engaged. She is a faithful Christian. Her fiancé is lapsed. He is no longer faithful. And I was talking to her about that because, you know, we all know how that goes. It's difficult when you're a believer and your spouse is not a faithful believer. It's difficult. It can be very challenging to stay faithful. And I was talking to her about that, and I said, what's going on with him? I know what he does. The job he has makes it very difficult. He's in a world that varies very anti-God and anti-Bible and all that stuff. But she said the main problem is all the hypocrites in church. She said that's the main problem. She said the main problem is that he sees people in church saying one thing but doing another. And he's left a faithful relationship with Jesus because of what he sees in the church. There's a lot of things that we could pick out and point to and grab onto and say, there's a good reason not to bother. There's a good reason not to try. There's a good reason why I'm not going to live a faithful Christian. There's a million things like that. If you want one, you can find it. But at the end of the day, you're still on the wrong side of Jesus. At the end of the day, you're still lost. At the end of the day, you're still not in a relationship with the one who's going to judge you. Why? If Jesus is going to judge you later, why not get on his good side now? And what he wants from you, Paul said, is for you to repent. That means to change. And so I'll ask you, we're going to sing a song in just a moment, to give us a moment as we sing it to think about our condition before God. So I just want to ask you, as we sing the song, to think about this question. What for you needs to change? What needs to change? It's probably almost impossible for there to be anybody in the building whose honest answer would be, not one thing. I'm golden. I can't do any better. As we sing the song, I hope that you will think carefully. What for you needs to change? When's the best time to do that? Because, as he said, God has fixed a day in which he's going to judge the world. When is that day? When is it? I don't know. You don't know. Could it be a year from now? Could it be 6 months from now? Could it be today? When do you need to make that change? As we sing the song and you think about that and you decide that you need to make a change, I hope that you will commit to doing that and make a plan to do that. And if we can help you to do that, this is a great time to let us know. We would love to speak with anybody privately after church, or you can come forward and take a seat on the front as we stand and sing.